So I'm going to introduce you and read your biography. And if you pronounce your last name,
Tonelato.
Okay. So Peter Tonelato, Dr. Tonelato, currently is a professor of the School of Public Health, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where he directs the Laboratory for Personalized Medicine, or LPM. He's also the professor of computer science in the College of Engineering and Applied Science. Professor Tonelato has a joint appointment with Harvard Medical School as a senior research scientist and director of the Laboratory for Personalized Medicine at the Center for Biomedical Informatics at the Harvard Medical School, and is visiting professor in the Department of Pathology, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. The LPM develops strategies, methods, bioinformatic tools, and analyses to study and test the accuracy and clinical efficacy of genetic discoveries and accelerates their translation to practical clinical use. The LPM designs and executes in silico experiments to explore and solve barriers to translation from discovery to clinical use. Dr. Tonelato's most recent work includes the creation of clinical avatars used to simulate realistic patient populations and provide a collection of electronic medical records used to test the efficacy of genetic data, accuracy of predictive algorithms, and to conduct clinical trial simulations. The LPM is the first biomedical research lab to establish all computational systems and services on the cloud implemented on Amazon's AWS environment.
Thank you very much. So this session has a diversity of presentation. I think mine is one of those that's quite diverse. And I want to try to convince you that we actually are doing translation and digital communication, but it's targeted to scientists and to, in particular, to multidisciplinary research teams. So it's going to look a little different than some of the previous presentations, but I hope I can get a similar message across, at least in a mild way. This work is funded from an NIEHS CORE Center's grant, and it's called the Children's Environmental Health Sciences CORE Center. And I run the bioinformatics core, and I won't go through all these details, but our objective is to take the complicated technologies and analysis tools that are available now and study the influence of environmental toxins and even climate stress-related situations, study those in the context of either human studies or what I'm going to talk about today is zebrafish. And zebrafish is a model of humans' response to various toxins. And so we want to convince you generally, and the systems that we put together are attempting to demonstrate how studies in zebrafish can translate and be communicated to people who are interested in human. And this complicated picture here up on the upper left is an experimental representation of experimental design of development of zebrafish embryos after they've been doused with methylmercury, which is one of the major toxins that's prevalent throughout our environments. In the lower left, is the rather strange genome of zebrafish. Because it's a certain class of species, it has a lot of strange structures to it. But in fact, the genes that functionally work in the zebrafish have a lot of what's called homology or functional similarity is what's happening in human. So in the far right in the upper part is human, is a representation of human. And what we want to do is when we study things in zebrafish and the influence of stressors, of toxins like methylmercury and other things, we want to understand how they affect the genome and the function of those genes and proteins. And then in the computer, in silico, we can try to understand or map those results over to human. Not from physiology to physiology, but from genetic influence to genetic influence. It's a little easier to do that on the genetic level. That beast, and then that's the human genome represented in the lower right. So we sort of set this up so we can do experiments in zebrafish and then understand what happens on this genetics level, or molecular level, and then that's a called a homology map in the center. That allows us to take results that we find out in zebrafish and try to understand what the influence of those results are, what the corresponding results in human are. So it's a lot of analysis, a lot of tools and complications. We use these tools that are called Galaxy. It's the kind of thing that you don't really want to learn about, certainly when you're communicating to the community, but it's the kind of environment that in a bioinformatics and an analysis environment, it's the sort of thing you want to communicate to the scientists, and environmental scientists in particular, who want to conduct these kinds of studies. And my group, and what I do a lot of, is understand these technologies and then try to deploy and teach others how to use them. So it's at a very different level than what we've talked about in the previous two presentations and probably what we presented in the following presentations, but I want to convince you that actually we're conducting a very similar digestion of technology and use of technology to try to deploy new information and have individuals who understand how to interpret that information at the human or even at the zebrafish level attempt to think about it in the context of environmental impact on human health. So I show you this very briefly only to say it's really complicated stuff, and it's not really anything that most of us want to learn about. In fact, I can't really keep up with it. I've got these postdocs and PhD students that are the ones who really understand how to use this. But those new technology gurus are probably no different than the gurus that are helping, is it IQ and others. They are essential to what we can do and how we can present results. And Galaxy is this environment that was developed at University of Pennsylvania in the computer science department, and it allows many investigators who, without the skillful training or many years of training that computer scientists have to go through, it allows them to harvest and use these resources to conduct these studies. So I just want to briefly talk about two examples of individuals that we've helped to use these technological tools to translate or to discover things in zebrafish and start thinking about what it means in terms of human health. And one of them is, again, zebrafish are a really handy animal model of human disease and human environmental impact because they're very small and you can see through them. Those are the two primary factors about why they're so important. So you can design these complicated experiments. You can dose the parents of the first generation of a zebrafish group of zebrafish, and then you can breed them. You can continue to dose them with methylmercury or other nasty things, and you can watch generation by generation what the effect of that dosing is. Now, it's one thing to see what happens generation by generation. Maybe they lose the development or use of their fin, or maybe they react differently in some behavioral test that they perform or that they put the zebrafish through. But the other thing, as I introduced earlier, the other thing we want to know is what's happening underneath all of the so-called phenotypes, the behavior of the fish or the motion of the fin, what's happening at the molecular level. And to do that, we have to extract out from those fish their DNA or RNA or other molecular objects, and then we sequence them. And I'm sure some of you have heard about next-generation sequencing and the powerful tool that's brought to us in public health. We can take out those genomes. We can basically digest them and put them through one of these things called a next-generation sequencer represented on the upper right. And out will pop the DNA or the RNA base pair by base pair. And what a system like Galaxy does is then reconstruct that genome in the computer, so then we can examine exactly what's happened to it. And we can compare the genomes of fish that have been dosed with methylmercury generation by generation with fish who have not been dosed with methylmercury. We can find out, well, what's the difference between those two? And if we find those differences, then we can start understanding, well, what genes and proteins have led to that change in behavior or that loss of motility of the fin. And that's the very beginning of being able to translate to human what might happen if humans are exposed to methylmercury. So I won't go through all the details of that, but we talk about digesting what one group think about and how they think about it and communicating it to another group. Well, what we have to do is digest how that experiment is performed and the digestion of the data and how it comes out of that sequencer, and we have to translate it into something that this system called Galaxy can analyze and then produce results. And I won't go through all the details, but let me just say that the data that comes out of these sequencers, and you've probably heard this term big data, and you might have heard it in the context of, you know, NSA doing things and social media producing a lot of information about individual-to-individual interaction. Well, the big data in my field are these sequences that come out of these next-generation sequencing centers and sequencing facilities. And the file size for just a little piece of those experiments are on the order of gigabytes. And if you go to human, a single human genome, when it's well-sequenced, takes up about a terabyte of data. So when we talk about big data, that's sort of what we, in biomedical science and translational medicine, that's the kind of big data that we think about, is terabytes of genomes worth of data. But that data is essential to digest down and get that information that I mentioned earlier. And we have a process, we take that experimental design and we sort of digitize it, and instead of going through the experiment in the wet lab, we reproduce those steps using the digital data that we have from those animals. And I don't need to go through all this. You can just say, hey, it's really complicated bioinformatics stuff. And then we document that. We document that in that Galaxy environment. And this is the environment, as complex as it looks, it's actually easier for these classic bench lab scientists to conduct this analysis. And so it's not something that you or I necessarily want to look at and examine and try to understand, but the bench lab scientists get very excited because instead of having this complicated bioinformatic platform that they have no way to access it, understand how to use it, and get the results that they want, we can now train them how to use it. And like I said, as surprising as it looks, we've actually just translated those five or six steps of that experimental analysis into this platform. And now they have the access. In fact, in our environment, they have access to literally thousands of computer cores that will do the analysis for them. The bottom line, though, is they want to see things like this. And again, it's not what you put in front of a physician or put in front of a community group. But for the scientists, they can interpret these kinds of visuals no differently than the kinds of visuals and communications that you've presented, you design and present to your different audiences. That's what we do as well. And it turns out that this particular gene, which is located in, this is a representation of one chromosome, and a gene is represented by that the left and right boundaries of that green box. And on the lower box, we have the normal zebrafish. And you can see in the green box in the lower panel, there's sort of not much activity. There's just some dots there. They're all blue. But if you look at the upper box, there's a lot of blue and a red dots and sort of more stuff in there, more information in there. Well, that actually is something they can interpret no differently than when you're presenting some of the scenarios that you spoke about earlier about triggering information for children that a parent would digest and then translate to their child. The, you know, bench scientists can look at that and translate it and interpret it. And those are very important signals for them, no differently than many of the signals that you want to put out to the community that you're trying to communicate to. That all boils down to a result that they can publish. And so this is sort of the diagram that they have for their publication. And although it's very hard to detect that signal by just a casual observer who hasn't looked at this quite a bit, what they're showing is there's a modification of what's called the methylation sites in the normal zebrafish genome compared to that which has been dosed with methylmercury. And that modification, it turns out, it has something to do with the immune system of the zebrafish. And it's not a good thing to modify the immune system or the immune response of a zebrafish. It makes them, makes a fish no differently than us. If we have these molecular modifications, certain ones of them make us less immune or less robust to environmental factors that might stress us. The second thing I'm just going to briefly talk about is this: we can use our tools in any sort of organism. And so here's a very interesting project that we're working with a couple of different groups. And what they've gone out around the world at the in the coral systems of various oceans, and they've harvested coral that's been under thermal stress that they attribute to climate change. And these coral systems are not behaving very well under this thermal stress. Somehow if they were healthy and they are stressed in a thermal manner, then they should recover. Maybe they behave badly, get a temperature for a while, but then they recover. But what's happening now is something has happened so that certain corals have been stressed maybe many, many times, and again, their immune system is beginning to break down. And so although you'd expect them to recover, it turns out that they don't seem to be recovering as one would expect. So I'll take just 2 seconds. This is the disease, the phenotype of the disease. It's a deadening of the outside of the coral, and then eventually everything dies. But what I want to point out is, again, we've got a lot of data of different kinds of corals, and sure enough, we create one of these pipelines of this very complicated analysis, and then we translate it to that environment. And so suddenly, we're able to take our environment, which in a way we're trying to communicate our environment and what it does and what results it gives, and we can present it to zebrafish investigators, and over here we can present it to coral investigators, and eventually we'll be presenting it to human people who study human response. And in fact, this study that I've just briefly mentioned, they are finding certain genes that have been modified under this repetitive, what they believe to be this repetitive thermal stress, which has created a weakness in the immune response of these corals. So when a disease does come along and attack the coral, they can't respond as well as they would, the hypothesis is, as they would if they hadn't been under this repetitive thermal stress.